this computer. Let's open in prayer. Father, thank you for your goodness to us and your word that you've given to us to guide us. We ask you to open our hearts and minds that we might receive what you have for us this evening. Thank you in Jesus' name. Amen. Daniel 10. So we had, well, I was to mentioning last time how this goes back and forth in time. In chapter 8, the vision, there was a vision that King Belshazzar had. And then in 9, we were in the Darius, the son of Ahasuerus. In 10, we're with Cyrus of Persia. And these go, I've got a little timeline thing in this book just to give you an idea of how this jumps. Belshazzar was, I'm going to give you some dates by, Jewish chronology dates, because that's what years from creation is how they do it. That was about 3,380 years from creation when Belshazzar was reigning. Then in 3,389, Darius the Mede became the leader. And he is going to be the guy's vision that we have in chapter 11 when we get there, because in 11 says in the first year of Darius the Mede. So we were all the way up. It goes like this: Darius the Mede, this is the Persian Empire. Darius the Mede, then Cyrus, then Ahasuerus, then Darius the Persian. So we're just jumping back and forth, jumping back and forth. It's really amazing, but these are very, they're not at all in the order. Like the in 11, that was one of the that was the earliest Persian vision, and it's the one that's given last. So it's quite something. So we are up to 10. And I will start to read. This is Cyrus. Cyrus is right in the middle. He's after Darius the Mede, but he is before Darius, the son of Ahasuerus. So, in the third year of King Cyrus of Persia, an oracle was revealed to Daniel, who was called Belshazzar. Belteshazzar. The oracle was true, but it was a great task to understand the prophecy. Understanding came to him through the vision. Now that's interesting. It was a great task to understand the prophecy, but understanding came to him through the vision. What does your translation say about that? Verse one.
The message was true, but the appointed time was long, and he understood the message and had understanding of the vision.
He says he had understanding of the vision. I see.
Yeah.
At that time, I, Daniel, kept 3 full weeks of mourning. I ate no tasty food, nor did any meat or wine enter my mouth. I did not anoint myself until the 3 weeks were over. It was on the 24th day of the first month, when I was on the bank of the great river, the Tigris, that I looked and saw a man dressed in linen, his loins girt in fine gold. His body was like beryl, his face had the appearance of lightning, his eyes were like flaming torches, his arms and legs had the color of burnished bronze, and the sound of his speech was like the noise of a multitude. Is that similar to the description that we have in Revelation?
I was just going to say that exact thing.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I believe it is.
I believe it is.
I'm just going to try to check. Of course, there are several different visions, but in Revelation, but let's see. I think this would be one of the first ones.
I think it's what, Revelation 2:18?
Possibly. There's a vision in chapter one. I turned to see the voice that spake with me in the midst of the seven candlesticks, one like unto a son of man, clothed with a garment down to the foot and girded. His head and his hair were white like wool, white as snow.
Oh, yeah,
His
I was.
eyes were as a flaming fire. Well, it says his eyes were like flaming torches.
What verse are you reading right now?
I'm reading in 1:14.
Oh, because 2:18 says, these things says the Son of God, who has eyes like a flame of fire in his
Okay, there's another example
like
of it.
fine brass.
Yeah. And this says also, legs had the color of burnished bronze here.
Yeah.
Sound of his speech was like the noise of a multitude. Now, this does it say anything about this? Yeah, the voice has the sound of many waters. So it's clearly the same. I think Revelation is saying this is the same vision that person that Daniel saw. I think that's clearly what the writer in Revelation is trying to say.
Yes.
I, Daniel, alone saw the vision. The men who were with me did not see the vision. Yet they were seized with a great terror and fled into hiding. So I was left alone to see this great vision. I was drained of strength. My vigor was destroyed, and I could not summon up strength.
You know, that's another thing. John says that.
He says that also.
Yeah.
Yeah, and verse 17, when I saw him, I fell at his feet as dead. And he laid his right hand on me, saying unto me, fear not, I am the first and the last.
So both Daniel and
Yeah,
John
John had.
experience it. Which, so he says, great terror fell upon me. Right?
Yeah.
No.
I think I'm, where am I up to? I'm up to, I heard up to nine, verse nine.
Yeah.
I heard him speaking, and when I heard him speaking, overcome by deep sleep, I lay prostrate on the ground. Then a hand touched me and shook me onto my knees, on my hands and knees. He said unto me, now that's similar again to John. Because John said, I fell at his feet as dead, and he laid his right hand upon me, saying unto me, fear not. That's in 1:17.
Yeah.
Daniel, he said unto me, O Daniel, precious man, mark what I say to you, stand up, for I have been sent to you. And he said this to me. And after he said this to me, I stood up trembling. He then said to me, have no fear, Daniel, for from the first day that you set in your mind to get understanding, practicing abstinence before your God, your prayer was heard, and I have come because of your prayer. However, the prince of the Persian kingdom opposed me for 21 days. Now Michael, the prince of the first rank, has come to my aid after I was detained there with the kings of Persia. So I've come to make you understand what is to befall your people in the days to come, for there is yet a vision for those days. While he was saying these things to me, I looked down and kept silent. Then one who looked like a man touched my lips, and I opened my mouth and spoke, saying to him who stood before me, my Lord, because of the vision, I have been seized with pangs and cannot summon strength. How can this servant of my Lord speak with my Lord, seeing that my strength has failed and no spirit is left in me? He who looked like a man touched me again and strengthened me. He said, have no fear, precious man. All will be well with you. Be strong, be strong. And as he spoke with me, I was strengthened and said, speak on, my Lord, for you have strengthened me. Then he said, do you know why I've come to you? Now I must go back to fight the prince of Persia. When I go off, the Prince of Greece will come in. No one is helping me against him except your Prince Michael. However, I will tell you what is recorded in the Book of Truth. Now, this is interesting. That's the end of the chapter. And it doesn't say anything else in this vision, because the next thing that we hear in 11 is in the first year of Darius the Mede. That's way before the third year of King Cyrus of Persia. It goes into, so so it, we got to just look at this, because this is interesting. And I think the most interesting thing is that if this is a vision of Christ, who had not yet come to be a man, he hadn't been incarnated yet. Does this imply that they're you know, that in the vision sort of transcends time?
Well,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I mean,
it's weird.
I think that it's not that Christ didn't exist before the incarnation.
Yeah, but he was. I'm not saying he didn't exist. I'm saying he wasn't incarnated. And he says he looks like a man.
Right. I don't know. I always just thought that Christ was from everlasting.
Yeah, but I'm not saying he wasn't, but I'm just surprised that he was recognized as a man.
Yeah.
That's the part that was
that is interesting. Yeah.
So the last part of this message is and you know, he's waging the spiritual warfare against these forces, spiritual forces that are opposing, I guess, God's will or God's plan for the earth. But the message is, he just asks him, "Do you know why I've come to you?" And he doesn't tell him, he doesn't confirm anything, doesn't say he does, he doesn't say he doesn't. He says, "I have to go now. And no one's helping me. However, I will tell you what is recorded in the Book of Truth." So, I guess that happens in a further vision, or it's not recorded here. Any other, do you have any comments on that, John?
No.
I'm about a loss as to what to say.
I was trying to understand the whole Michael thing. I wasn't really following that.
Oh, wait a minute. I see what's where I'm going off. John, I see where I'm going off. It's not like Daniel has another vision in the year in Darius the Mede's time. The man is telling Daniel in 11:1, in the first year of Darius the Mede, I took my stand to strengthen and fortify him. That is to strengthen and fortify Darius the Mede. And now I'll tell you the truth. Persia will have three more kings, and the fourth will be wealthier than them all. So I think that's what explains why a king who existed before the time Daniel has this vision is being talked about, because It's Christ that's telling Daniel, I was in the year of Darius, I was strengthening him. I was strengthening him, and now I'm telling you there's going to be three more kings.
Okay.
And the fourth will be wealthier than them all. So that makes more sense. So, do you want to go on to 11 then?
Yeah.
Okay. So, he says, Persia will have three more kings. The fourth will be wealthier than them all. By the power he obtains through his wealth, he will stir everyone up against the kingdom of Greece. Then a warrior king will appear who will have an extensive dominion and do as he pleases. But after his appearance, his kingdom will be broken up and scattered to the four winds of heaven. Now, what people generally say this is talking about is the war that Persia had with Greece, where Alexander the Great actually conquered Persia and ruled until he died, and then his kingdom was divided among his four generals. That's why he says that the warrior king will appear, will have an extensive dominion, do as he pleases, but after his appearance, his kingdom will be broken up and scattered to the four winds of heaven, because it was divided into four pieces.
That's really interesting.
But not for any of his posterity, nor with dominion like that which he had, for his kingdom will be uprooted and belong to others besides these. No, those weren't his relatives. They were just his generals that divided it up. The king of the south, which was Ptolemy, and his kingdom was located in Egypt, will grow powerful. Now, I'm not going to be able to relate all the history to this because I'm not that familiar with it. There are commentaries that will do that. And give you a rough idea as to who he's talking about. One of his overs will overpower him and rule, having extensive dominion. After some years, an alliance will be made, and the daughter of the king of the south will come to the king of the north. The king of the north is
Antiochus.
Antiochus Epiphanes, yeah.
Yeah.
To effect the agreement, but she will not maintain her strength, nor will his strength endure. She will be surrendered together with those who escorted her and the one who begot her and helped her during those times. A shoot from her stock will appear in this place, will come against the army and enter the fortress of the king of the north. He will fight and overpower them. He will also take their gods with their molten images and their precious vessels of silver, and go back to Egypt as booty. For some years, he will leave the king of the north alone, who will later invade the realm of the king of the south, but will go back to his land. His sons will wage war, collecting a multitude of great armies. He will advance and sweep through as a flood, and will again wage war as far as his stronghold. Then the king of the south, in a rage, will go out to do battle with him. With the king of the north, he will muster a great multitude, but the multitude will be delivered into his foe's power. But when the multitude is carried off, he will grow arrogant. He will cause myriads to perish, but will not prevail. Then the king of the north will again muster a multitude even greater than the first. After a time, a matter of years, he will advance with a great army and much baggage. In those times, many will resist the king of the south, and the lawless sons of your people will assert themselves to confirm the vision, but they will fail. So you have this, I guess, long drawn out battle between the king of the Syrian province and the king of Egypt, where it goes back and forth, and finally you have the king of the north advancing with this huge army. And the Daniel's told, in those times, many will resist the king of the south, and the lawless sons of your people will assert themselves to confirm the vision, but they will fail. What do you think that means?
What?
That passage about the lawless sons of your people trying to confirm the vision.
Yeah. It says, violent men of your people shall exalt themselves in fulfillment of the vision, but they shall fall.
It almost sounds like what people do. They know about the prophecy, and they take matters into their own hands trying to make it come true. Do you think that's possibly what it's referring to?
I don't know if it's an attempt to make it true so much as in doing that.
In doing what they're doing, they are fulfilling it. Yeah.
Yeah, because it says exalt themselves in fulfillment of it, not as
to confirm it,
but
yeah.
In fulfillment of it.
Yeah. It could go either way.
Yeah. I like that verse because, again, it teaches that things aren't just
chance and random.
Yeah, it's right.
Right. In either event, it isn't.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Right. Even when they think they're exalting themselves, they're doing this, which, again, Revelation talks about.
Yep. In those times, many will. Okay, I said that. The king of the north will advance and throw up siege ramps and capture a fortress city, and the forces of the south will not hold out. Even the elite of his army will be powerless to resist. His opponent will do as he pleases, for none will hold out against him. He will install himself in the beautiful land with destruction within his reach. He will set his mind upon invading the strongholds throughout his foe's kingdom. But in order to destroy it, he will effect an agreement with him and give him a daughter in marriage. He will not succeed at it, and it will not come about. He will turn to the coastlands and capture many, but a consul will put an end to his insults, nay, pay him back for his insults. He will head back to the strongholds of his own land, but will stumble and fall and vanish. His place will be taken by one who will dispatch an officer to exact tribute for royal glory. But he will be broken in a few days, not by wrath or by war. His place will be taken by a contemptible man, one on whom royal majesty was not conferred. He will come in unawares and seize the kingdom through trickery. The forces of the flood will be overwhelmed by him and will be broken. And so too the covenant leader. And from the time an alliance is made with him, he will practice deceit and he will rise to power with a small band. He will invade the richest of provinces unaware and will do what his father and forefathers never did, lavishing on them spoil, booty, and wealth. He will have designs upon strongholds, but only for a time. He will muster his strength and courage against the king of the south with a great army. The king of the south will wage war with a very great and powerful army, but will not stand fast, for they will devise plans against him. Those who eat of his food will ruin him. His army will be overwhelmed and many will fall slain. The minds of both kings will be bent on evil while sitting at the table together. They will lie to each other, but to no avail, for there is yet an appointed term. He will return to his land with great wealth, his mind set against the Holy Covenant. Having done his pleasure, he will return to his land. At the appointed time, he will again invade the south, but the second time will not be like the first. Ships from Kittim will come against him. He will be checked and will turn back. raging against the Holy Covenant. Having done his pleasure, he will then attend to those who forsake the Holy Covenant. Forces will be levied by him. They will desecrate the temple, the fortress. They will abolish the regular offering and set up the appalling abomination. He will flatter with smooth words those who act wickedly toward the covenant. But the people devoted to their God will stand firm. The knowledgeable among the people will make the many understand, and for a while they shall fall by sword and flame, suffer captivity and spoliation. In defeat, they will receive a little help, and many will join them in sincerely. Some of the knowledgeable will fall, but they may be refined and purged and whitened until the time of the end, for an interval still remains until the appointed time. A lot of this is talking about, you know, Antiochus did attack Jerusalem. He did defile the temple. He did persecute the Jewish people. So you can see elements of that being described here. And he was ultimately resisted by the Maccabees. And yet it seems like it's talking about the future beyond that.
Yeah.
It
seems like it's talking about the Antichrist.
Yeah, it's at the same, because a lot of the same things that are said about him are said again in Revelation about the Antichrist, breaking the treaty in the midst of the week.
Right. And the abomination of desolation.
And the abomination of desolation, which Jesus talked about.
Yeah. But I think we've talked about this before.
Yeah.
I mean, there's lots of antichrists.
Mm-hmm.
So it's I guess it's proper that they would have similar careers.
Right. 36, the king will do as he pleases. He will exalt and magnify himself above every god, and he will speak awful things against the God of gods. He will prosper until wrath is spent and what has been decreed is accomplished. He will not have regard for the God of his ancestors or for the one dear to women. He will not have regard for any god, but will magnify himself above all. He will honor the God of fortresses on his stand. He will honor with gold and silver, with precious stones and costly things, a God that his ancestors never knew.
Can I interrupt you?
Yeah, please.
The line where it says 37, he mm-hmm. shall regard neither the God of his fathers nor the desire of women.
Mm-hmm.
Regard any God. I always took that as being like what we see now with transgenderism and the rise of all that stuff. I mean, doesn't it suggest that there's this male who will not desire women?
I don't know if that's what it means.
Okay.
I'm not sure I do know what it means either, but I always took it to mean be a reference to Christ, because Eve was told that there would be this, you know, the seed would come from her. And I think,
wait a minute, what is a reference to Christ?
The phrase, the desire of women.
Okay.
And the reason I'm saying that, there's a phrase, I think, isn't he, I think Christ is, the Messiah is called the one who the nations desire in one of the prophecies. I'll have to look that up. The desire of all nations shall come. That's the phrase from Handel's Messiah. Let me find that passage. I'm going to look it up real quick here. And it's not that only women desire him. It's that He is the desire of all nations, and he is the seed of the woman. You see what I mean by the desire of women?
I see.
Desire of
Okay. My
all
commentary says the
nations.
desire of women is usually taken to be either a female goddess or the desire of every Jewish woman to be the mother of the Messiah.
Yeah. It's Haggai 2:7 and 8, 2:7. That God will shake all the nations, and the desire of all nations shall come. So that's
Okay.
how I sort of thought that he would rage against the God of gods, and he won't regard either the God of his ancestors or the one that the Jewish people are waiting for, their Messiah. He will not have regard for any God, but will magnify himself above all, and will honor the God of fortresses on his stand. Now, I think that's a pretty close. Where's I think in we could only find. I wish I had all these other verses where they're located. Because you sort of get confused. Was it Jesus that was saying this, or was it in Revelation? But it seems like this same description is repeated.
Which phrase are you talking about, Dad?
About the God of forces.
Mine says fortresses.
Yeah, mine does too, but I'm saying that. Let me see if I can find the word. It's Daniel 11:38. Okay, 38. Didn't get there yet. No, okay. King James says forces. It's the King James that I'm thinking of. Okay. That's the only place that occurs that I can see. Okay.
So basically, it's the God of power.
Yeah. Which makes a lot of sense. Other words, instead of believing in God, he believes in natural forces, which makes a lot of sense in the current. The current setting. So what are we up? We're up to, okay, 39. He will deal with fortified strongholds with the help of an alien god. Now that's interesting. I wonder if it literally means aliens.
Mine says foreign God.
Foreign god, yeah.
Thus he shall act against the strongest fortresses with a foreign God.
He will heap honor on those who acknowledge him and will make them master over many. He will distribute land for a price. At the time of the end, the king of the south will lock horns with him, but the king of the north will attack him with chariots and riders and many ships. He will invade land, sweeping through them like a flood. He will invade the beautiful land too. And many will fall, but these will escape his clutches: Edom, Moab, and the chief parts of the Ammonites. He will lay his hand on lands. Not even the land of Egypt will escape. He will gain control over treasures of gold and silver and over all the precious things of Egypt. And Libyans and Cushites will follow at his heel. So apparently, he will take over most of the Middle East, except for Moab, Edom, and the Ammonites, which is basically Jordan. He will march forth in a great fury to destroy and annihilate many. He will pitch his royal pavilion between the sea and the beautiful holy mountain, and he will meet his doom with no one to help him. So he's pitching his tent between the whole beauty, the beautiful holy mountain, which I guess is Mount Zion. And there he meets his doom, which follows Revelation pretty close. See if I can find that. Where is that?
I think it's referring to Revelation 19:11.
Yeah, probably. And I saw heaven open, and behold, a white horse. And he that sat upon him was called Faithful and True. And in righteousness he doth judge and make war. The armies which were in heaven followed him. That's in 14, upon white horses. And out of his mouth goeth the sharp sword, that with it he should smite the nations, and he shall rule them with a rod of iron. He treadeth the winepress of the fierceness and wrath of Almighty God. And then I'm just going to go down to 19. I saw the beast and the kings of the earth and their armies gathered together to make war against him that sat on the horse and against his army. And the beast was taken, and with him the false prophet that wrought miracles. These both were cast alive into the lake of fire. So I think that's referring to the same thing there. So we have one more chapter. You want to get one? Should we finish it?
Yeah, might as well.
At that time, the great prince Michael, who stands before the sons of your people, will appear. There will be a time of trouble, the like of which has never been since the nation came into being. That clearly is referring to the future, the final days. At that time, your people will be rescued. All who are found inscribed in the book. Many of those that sleep in the dust of the earth will awake, some to eternal life, others to reproaches, to everlasting abhorrence. And the knowledgeable will be radiant like the bright expanse of sky. And those who lead the many to righteousness will be like the stars forever and ever. But you, Daniel, keep the word secret and seal the book until the time of the end. Many will range far and wide, and knowledge will increase. Then I, Daniel, looked and saw two others standing, one on one bank of the river, the other on the other bank of the river. One said to the man clothed in linen who was above the water of the river, "How long until the end of these awful things?" Then I heard the man dressed in linen who was above the water of the river swear by the ever-living one, as he lifted his right hand and his left hand to heaven. For a time, times and a half time. And when the breaking of the power of the holy people comes to an end, then shall all these things be fulfilled. I heard and did not understand. So I said, "My Lord, what will be the outcome of these things?" He said, "Go, Daniel, for these words are secret and sealed to the time of the end. Many will be purified and purged and refined. The wicked will act wickedly, and none of the wicked will understand, but the knowledgeable will understand. From the time the regular offering is abolished and an appalling abomination is set up, it will be 1,290 days. Happy the one who waits and reaches 1,335 days. But you go on to the end. You shall rest and arise to your destiny at the end of the days." Wow. The 3.5 years is mentioning, that's the time, times and a half time. And it's when the power of the holy people comes to an end. When the breaking of the power of the holy people comes to an end. In other words, the Antichrist will have dominion over the holy people until the time is expired, and then that breaking of their power will cease.
Right.
And that will be the end.
What I wanted to focus on was, he says, from the time that the daily sacrifice is taken away, and the abomination of desolation is set up, there shall be 1,290 days.
Yes.
Then it says, blessed is he who waits and comes to the 1,335 days.
Yeah. So there's an extra 45 days somewhere, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's an interesting thing. I've heard people talk about that, but I don't really, couldn't tell you what they were saying because it wasn't convincing to me. And as a result, I didn't really try to memorize it or anything. But we'll have to see. There's an extra 45 days.
Yeah, that's really strange.
One thousand 290 days. Let me just see something. How that divides. 1,290 divided by 360. It's a little more than 3.5 years. And with an extra 45 days,
it's actually 55 days, right?
290.
It's 1,000.
290.
Oh, wait. It's 1,335.
Yeah.
Oh, I did 45.
And an extra, it's 45 days more.
Okay. Yes, you're
1,335 divided by 360. Yeah. It's like another month and a half. What can I say? And I don't know why.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those things, you know, that we'll know at the time of the end. That's what Daniel's being told. It's sealed. It gives us a rough, he's making us aware of it, but it's not explained.
I like how he tells him, like, go your way till the end.
Yeah.
You shall rest and will arise to your inheritance at the end of the days.
Mm-hmm.
Really nice.
Very nice. Yeah, it's a good passage.
Yeah.
So we have finished that. I'm going to stop the recording.